Blog Talk Radio.
From Dog Works Training Centers, Professional Canine Training Center in Denver, Colorado, this is the Dog Doctor. Committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogdoctorradio.com. The Dog Doctor is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now here is your host, Dr. Robert Forto, the Dog Doctor.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to the Dog Doctor Radio Show, brought to you by Twine Group Media and Denver Dog Works. We are doing a best-of show. This is one of our most popular shows. It is titled Moments with Baxter. It is about a 19-year-old therapy dog named Baxter who visits hospice homes in San Diego. So sit back and listen and enjoy the show.
So we're going to bring Melissa up. Melissa, are you there?
I'm right here.
Hi, Melissa. How are you? This is Robert from Dog Doctor
Robert.
Radio.
Hey, Michelle. Yep.
How are you today?
Well, you know,
we're great.
We had an extraordinary journey in reading your book over the past week, and we are so grateful to have you guys on today. And let's just start off. Tell us about who you are. Tell us about Baxter a little bit, and then we'll get into a discussion.
Well, I did want to say that I had an extraordinary journey writing the book and getting to know what Baxter was capable of. That's what truly was the impetus for my writing the book. I had no idea he had this special gift until I put him in that environment. Baxter, you know, as you said, is 19 and a half years old, and right now he's sitting here on my lap, and he's very alert. He's looking around. His ears are all perky. And he'll be going to work tomorrow and Monday at San Diego Hospice, where he goes 2 to 3 days a week. And he's rescue dog.
He was abused.
I got him when he was 2 years old. Very difficult to make friends with him. I assumed something really bad had happened. But about 3 months later, he and I made friends, and he started trusting me. And I had several other dogs and a cat in the environment when I rescued him. And he was with me when I buried all of my other animals, and he is the survivor. And so he and I have bonded even more deeply because he is my only pet, and he has been now volunteering for 6.5 years at San Diego Hospice.
That's amazing. And, you know, when we're reading through your book, I read that how you went to test with him. And can you tell us a little bit about the Therapy Dog International test and you know,
it will expose my stupidity. I had no idea that you go online and you look at the test questions and you train your dog to answer those test questions, or you take him to a therapy dog trainer and make sure that he will ace the test. So I made the appointment and went there to the certification officer in my area, which happened to be in Rancho Santa Fe in California, and took him there, and I was completely oblivious to the questions that Baxter was going to be asked. And we had to get in the car, my husband and I, and drive off and leave him there for an hour to make sure that he didn't have separation anxiety. And when we came back and the certification officer said, you know, I've just made my best new friend, I knew that we were on the way to something very special. And he did all the commands, the sit, stay, the sit there, then come to me. And it was kind of amazing, the right, left leads. Not to take food when it was put in front of him, not to have an interface with the dog when another dog was, you know, brought on the premises, had an electric wheelchair try to run over him. He just stood there. A cane was beaten all around him. Dishes were thrown all over the ground. I mean, very, very, you know, I would say abusive things around him to see if he would react, and Baxter remained completely neutral.
And he had absolutely no training?
Zero. I tell people that I'm crazy and I needed a therapy dog, and he's been my therapy dog since I rescued him, and maybe that's the training he had.
There you go.
But other than that, he has had zero formal training. That's why I believe he truly has a very unique gift.
Yeah, he does. And you know, we do a lot of service dog training here at Denver Dog Works, and we do a lot of autistic service dog training, and there are just some dogs out there that require absolutely no training whatsoever, and they can change a person and or a family's life just like that.
Yeah, in a moment.
In a moment. And we had, I've told this story before on our show. We have a service dog in training right now. Her name is Berlin. And we're training him for a five-year-old autistic boy. And hadn't been in training very long. She was a rejected therapy dog, as a matter of fact. And we ended up placing her with this family. And we took Berlin to the shopping mall. It was around, you know, a very busy weekend, and, you know, the young boy and his dad and the rest of the family were walking the dog, and I was with the mom, and she looked at me and she said,
I don't care what else happens from here,
he has changed our family's life. So whatever it takes, we want to make sure that this happens.
Yeah, so, I mean, you really do get it, and I do talk to a lot of people who completely get it, and it is an amazing journey to be with a dog who has some kind of almost prescient knowledge of what is. This has been a fascinating experience, and I've loved every dog I've had before Baxter, but I have to admit, I have never had a dog like this in my life. Never.
And I've never
been without a dog, and I'm 53 years old. I've had a dog since I was 6 years old.
Same here, and that's what makes us go to work every day. It's that
it's
that bond and connection that we have. Of course,
of course,
we do it for a living, but you know, we are severely attached to not only every dog that we train in place, whether it be service dogs or sports or whatever we're doing. It's a kinship like no other, isn't it?
Yeah, it's something that it really does supersede every other bond I have. It's in a special category.
It is.
Melissa, could I talk with you about Mo?
Yeah,
from the
absolutely.
Book? She was actually my favorite story. I loved the fact that Baxter took her on a date.
Was that great?
Was so cool. I'm just wondering, did he get to eat at least one piece of popcorn?
Oh, yeah, he loves popcorn. So I let him have just a little bit of popcorn, but typically I won't let him have that kind of, you know, food. But Baxter's a chow hound. I mean, he will eat anything. He'll eat marinated styrofoam. But that is a very sweet story. And one of the reasons why I think it's so sweet is because she remained positive about her existence and claimed Baxter as her own therapy dog. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, I love her beautiful smile. Every picture.
Yeah.
Every picture
she's
smiling.
She was a real joy to get to know. And I did think one of the most phenomenal things about that story is what happened at the very end. And I had, you know, validation from all the staff there at San Diego Hospice when Baxter was the only person who could touch her. And that to me really put the icing on the cake.
Yeah, it's very, very special. I hope that he had a great day that day. But I'm going to turn it back over to Robert. Every once in a while, I'm going to interrupt you guys and ask you to talk about a story that touched my heart.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
You know, Melissa, we have a 12-year-old Siberian. His name is Aneke, which means rescued friend in Inuit or Eskimo language, whatever your preference is for that. And he was one of my sled dogs. He came into our life. He's old. We rescued him from Washington, and we were living up in Bailey at the time, Bailey, Colorado, and we got the gear out for our dog sledding team that day, and he went absolutely berserk. Like, he knew exactly what he was supposed to do, and we hooked him up that first night, and he was just ready to go and pull and never looked back.
Mm.
And what ended up happening, he trained all of the other puppies throughout, you know, his years as a team member of ours, and he was the only one that was ever allowed in the house. The other dogs, you know, were rambunctious, so they stayed in the kennel. But I immediately knew that he had that special connection, not only with me and my team and out on the trail, but also with my family. And he's still with us. He is 12 and a half now, and you know, struggling a bit, getting up there in age as a working dog, but a true inspiration in a different sort. You know, you do therapy with Baxter, and of course we did dog sledding with Aneke, but I totally understand that kinship and how much joy and pleasure just an old dog can bring to not only their family members, but everybody around them.
Yeah, I think that I had a Siberian Husky once, and King was his name, and I rescued him. And I remember I had this old truck, and it was just it was almost like out of a storybook. He would sit right next to me and put his head on my shoulder everywhere we went. And I just was, I can tell you, you completely understand. It made me totally happy.
Exactly.
Totally happy. And never complained.
Yes, that is.
Never.
That's exactly right. So I'm looking at peoplepets.com and the story about Baxter here on the internet, and the picture there where he's in the wheelchair with the blue blanket, and he just looks like an old war hound, you know, that's been through the trenches, but he just has that look in his eye, you know.
Yeah, and that picture, that particular one, is 4 years old. The cover is like 8 months ago, but he was. It was a very cold day, and they were taking pictures of all the therapy dogs, and everybody was supposed to. All the dogs were supposed to stand on the steps with their trainers.
Uh-huh.
And I said, you know, Baxter can't stand on those steps that long; it won't work out. And so one of the staff members, one of the nurses, brought us a wheelchair and put a wool blanket in it for Baxter. So I thought it was perfect.
That's a great picture, and I want to get back to his, kind of his working life in just a few minutes. But my first question is can you tell the people that are listening that may not know what exactly is a therapy dog and what are they required to do? You know, I know it talks about it in your book, but of course we want to promote that book on the show here.
Sure.
But tell people what a therapy dog is and what they do.
Well, I think it's epitomized by the emblem that Baxter wears around his neck on a little chain, and it says, I'm a therapy dog, and you turn it over and it says, my job is to comfort and serve. And I say that over and over again because he does. He gets in bed with patients and he comforts them and he is serving them. He is there for them. If they want him a little closer, if they want him at the foot of their bed, if wherever they want him, it is all about the patient. And so, or if the patient is not available, there's sofas, people bring their own aerobeds to hospice, they camp out up there, they bring their own animals, they turn their rooms into their own regular bedroom from home, they bring photographs and rugs, etc. And so Baxter will get in bed or get on a sofa, and he will actually want to be held like a baby, even though he weighs 39 pounds, and he's a cuddle guy. So you put him in your lap, and he puts his head on your shoulder, and all of a sudden, you see this kind of infirmed dog, and it's like you recalibrate your energy and you're no longer focusing on the negative, but you're focusing on this innocent little guy who's at the end of his life. And the identification with the patient and Baxter is tremendous because they see that he can't walk, for instance, and they'll say, oh, my God, he can't walk. Either can I. Or, oh, my God, he has this problem. Well, so do I. Or, oh, my God, I'm on amlodipine, too. That's my blood pressure medication, and Baxter's on that, too. And it goes on, and it's something that I myself can't create for them. Only Baxter can create that. And so the bond, though tacit, is instantaneous. And I'm kind of just out of the picture on the periphery. And Baxter ends up being the focus of the patient. And they report on numerous occasions that their pain levels go from an 8 to a 0.
Is that right?
I promise. Over and over, a nurse will walk in and say, don't you just love being there with Baxter? And somebody will speak up and say, the nurse will say, now, how's your pain level now? And they'll go, you know, I had so much, but right now I don't have any. And it's because of Baxter.
And that's the whole idea behind therapy work and animal...
And it's the whole idea behind palliative medicine, is that you do these other modalities that are not prescription drugs. And you refocus the energy. And think, I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but for instance, if you have a stomach ache or a headache and someone calls you and it's someone you really love and care about and you're so happy to hear from them, all of a sudden you kind of forget you have the stomach ache or the headache and you're into the conversation and you're into wanting to relate to them. It's kind of the same thing. He takes you away from being self-absorbed.
That's exactly right. And that's such a special bond that dogs can provide. I know that they do have other animals that do therapy work as well, but I struggle with that sometimes. You know, you always hear about the therapy dog or therapy donkeys and therapy monkeys and things like that. And
Yeah.
And just looking at Baxter, he truly looks like a teddy bear. And I had one. I had a teddy bear when I was a little kid, and he looked exactly like Baxter. And, you know, he had mangy spots, and we had to sew on new eyes and all that kind of stuff. And that really brought a joy to me when I saw that. Michelle, anything
well,
you want?
Well, excuse me for just a second, but there is a teddy bear on Baxter's website that we're going to sell, and all the proceeds from the teddy bear go to the SPCA. And if you go to Baxter's blog, you'll see a picture of him holding his teddy bear.
And that's momentswithbaxter.com, is that correct?
.com. You got it. And you just hit the blog icon, and you'll see the photograph of Baxter holding his teddy bear with a removable therapy jacket. On one side says therapy dog, and on the other side it says Baxter.
There you go. Michelle, what would you like to say?
I like this story about Donald. Donald tells you, I don't need another therapy dog. I just need Baxter. How many therapy dogs besides Baxter are at the San Diego Hospice?
Well, they come and go. A lot of dogs recently have died. They have lost three dogs to cancer recently.
Yeah.
So at one time there have been as many as five dogs. Right now there are only three. But Baxter seems to be the most requested therapy dog. He's also there. He's more salient there because he visits more frequently than any other therapy dog. He goes every holiday, be it Labor Day, he'll be there all day Monday, does Christmas, New Year's Eve. He's always there on holidays, and then he goes 2 to 3 times a week other than that, and he stays for 3 to 4 hours at a time.
Right, that's extraordinary.
So,
that's a working dog, not just a therapy dog. It's amazing to me that he has the resilience to keep doing this at his age.
Well, I think part of that resilience has to do with swimming. You know, he can't walk anymore, and so he goes to a swim therapist 4 days a week, and he swims for 30 minutes at a time.
Wow, that's pretty extraordinary. I saw the other day that the oldest dog died. He was 21.
Chanel.
And I really thought about Baxter, and I hold
so
out.
So did I.
And I hope that he can break that record.
I do too. As long as he's comfortable, he's not on any pain medication right now. He does get acupuncture every 2 weeks, and he gets a massage with a laser every 3 weeks. And then I massage him every day. I've kind of been taught how to do that. And but he's only on his blood pressure medication and his thyroid meds. He's been on that for about 7 years, though, and he's not on anything else.
So, Melissa, tell us a little bit why you guys, in your book, you talk about you and your husband going into the hospice. Why did you choose that setting over a children's hospital or a nursing home or other places?
Well, I tell you, we did go to Children's Hospital after we had been volunteering at hospice, and the wait was longer than Baxter would have been alive, because everybody thinks about volunteering at Children's Hospital with their dog because of children, but very few people want to volunteer in an environment where people are dying. I mean, they're literally dying before your very eyes.
Yeah, when I talked to... Go ahead.
Yeah. No, please.
When I talk to my clients and they call me and they say, can you help us train a therapy dog? And the first thing I ask them is, where are you taking the dog? What is your plan? And a lot of them say, oh, I want to do Children's Hospital. And I try to explain to them, it doesn't matter what Children's Hospital in this country you try to get into. The waiting list is extraordinarily long.
It is very long, and they also have stringent rules, like you can come 1 day a month,
right,
and you can stay for 2 hours or an hour, and you have to punch in and punch out. Well, at San Diego Hospice, there's 24 beds. I can go 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I can go anytime I want to go. It's an open door.
And that's awesome.
That's really helpful for my schedule and for Baxter, because if I committed to a Tuesday and let's say he wasn't having a good day, then I miss my time to help other people, and he misses the opportunity to be working, which is very important for his longevity.
Absolutely.
But
I wish that people would take a moment and really listen to what you and I are trying to say, and that is that it doesn't matter if the people are dying, we shouldn't be afraid to allow our dogs to help them as well.
Well, I think that one of the reasons why I wanted to volunteer at hospice in that particular environment was my own personal fear of death. And since I've been volunteering there now, I don't have that fear anymore. And I also feel that it really is a very, I mean, it's like this mysterious journey that no one knows about. And to be a part of that at the end of someone's life is overwhelming.
That's right. We're going to take a commercial break, Melissa. Thank you so much. Please hold on, and we'll be right back with you. You're listening to the Dog Doctor Radio Show live in Denver, Colorado. Thank you so much.
Isn't it finally time to get your dog under control? Aggression and behavior problems need to be handled the right way. At Denver Dog Works Professional Canine Behavior Center, we have knowledgeable, skilled, and friendly instructors. We're convenient. Our training classes are available Monday through Friday evenings and Saturday afternoons. Private lessons can be scheduled to fit your timetable. We know our stuff. Our instructors are all extremely knowledgeable in the science of behavior and learning theory. In fact, we're the only training center in the area that has a PhD on staff and require all of our instructors to be certified. At Denver Dog Works, our training classes give you great results using the easiest, most up-to-date methods. We have comprehensive training programs in a variety of disciplines to allow your dog to reach its fullest potential and develop a healthy family relationship. At Denver Dog Works, we have the best and train the rest. Call Denver Dog Works 303-752-2818 or log on at denverdogworks.com.
Hello, everybody. We are back. This is Robert Forto here with my co-host, Michelle Forto. We are talking today with author and therapy dog owner, handler, whatever she prefers to be called, with the oldest therapy dog in the world, Baxter. We are talking about her new book and her life with the dog with the healing touch. If you're interested in Moments with Baxter, you can go to momentswithbaxter.com. And the book is there. You can also find it on Amazon.com as well. And we're going to get right back into this interview with Melissa. Melissa, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Good. Thank you for staying on online with us here for your interview. We have a couple of questions through the break. Michelle and I were talking, and a lot of things that come up when we are talking to prospective therapy dog owners or handlers, teams, as well as service dog teams, is how are these dogs still allowed to be dogs? I know Baxter has some physical limitations now, but what did he do in his younger day that still allowed him to be a dog? You know, did he go swimming? Did he play fetch? Was he the family dog, you know, sitting with your husband watching Monday Night Football? What kind of stuff did he do that allowed him to be a dog instead of working all the time?
I used to live on a lake, and I would swim across the lake for part of our routine because I was doing triathlons. And Baxter would get in the water, and he would sit there in the water with his butt in the water and his torso out of the water and bark at me going across the lake and bark until I came back. And then as soon as I got really close, he'd wag his tail and get so excited I was back and everything was okay. And he'd quit barking, and he'd get out of the water with me. And that was about – he never did a toy. When I adopted him, I had two other dogs, as I said, and a cat, and he loved to hang out with the cat and they would kind of chase each other. But Baxter, being part chow, you know, chows are not real active in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
And now what he does playfully, I think, is he has this chew stick he likes. He still is into that. And I recently got one of those lookouts. I don't know the doggy lookouts, if you know. It's like a car seat for dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a double one, and I put it on the front seat, and I give him his chew stick anywhere when we're on our way to hospice or on our way anywhere. He goes with me a lot of different places because I can take him into my doctor's appointments or whatever. He can go with me. And he takes that stick with him and just has it in his mouth and gets down and dirty on it. And I love watching him because, to me, it still means he's got that puppy in him.
Yep. That's exactly right.
You know, he's still got that brightness, that playfulness. He's still interested.
So that
lets me know that he has a sense of well-being.
And that's exactly right. You know, they are not little robotic dogs, you know, little machines that are just going to work all the time. They not only enjoy the work, but they get something out of it as well, don't they?
Oh, my goodness. I think that, you know, it's just like when you love someone who reciprocates, you get back 100-fold, you know, whatever,
mm-hmm.
200-fold or whatever. And I think Baxter gives, and then it comes so far back to him so deeply. It just penetrates his spirit, and it makes him just, he's like in utter bliss.
That's amazing.
And he's a happy dog. Despite his limitations, the fact that he can't walk, and that's really all he can't do. He can do everything else. He can go to the bathroom by himself, one and two. He can stand up to eat his food. He can stand up to get his water. He never barked before, except in the water with me, and now he barks to let me know every time he needs to go to the bathroom. He's never messed in the house, never messed in the bed.
I have a question for you, Melissa. I have a client right now that works with the Denver Mental Health Department, and she deals with therapy groups with children, and not just teenagers, but young children as well. And I'm helping recertify her therapy dog. And her therapy dog is 5 years old, and she notices that her dog really does feel stressed at the end of the visit. So we're teaching her to do some decompressing type exercises and things like that. She lays on the floor, and the kids are allowed to come over and tell them their secrets and really release all of the things that they are holding inside. And I know in a hospice situation, that's really what's going on when these people don't feel the pain anymore. They're really kind of releasing it onto Baxter, and he's taking it, and he's sucking up all of that pain for them and taking it out of the room when he leaves. And they feel really good for a few hours after he's gone, as I'm sure you are aware of. How does he feel at the end of his therapy day? Is he exhausted or is he exuberant?
Exhausted.
Yeah.
He's exactly, but I think it's way harder with children for an older dog like Baxter. If I put him with children, it's much more stressful than if he's with adults who are more calm.
Yes, this dog's five.
Yeah. You know, I think that makes a big difference on their energy level.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I have found for Baxter. But he's usually very exhausted, and on the way home, he's still asleep.
Okay.
He's not that far. It's only a 30-minute drive, but he sleeps the whole way home, and then, you know, he'll eat something and he'll go back to bed. So, it's exhausting.
Right.
I think people fondle all over you and make all over you and want to kiss you and then hold you and pet you and pull on your paws
right.
and pull on your tail.
Right.
They can only take so much of that, and then they become saturated. There's a cutoff point. And I honor that in him. Even if another patient says we get a request to go to another room, I'll say, you know, I'm so sorry, but Baxter is...
He's had enough today.
He has nothing left to give. Maximum point, and it's a cutoff point, and I just honor that. And you know, a lot of times my husband will say, you know, please, if I'm not, going to do it to him because it won't be a good visit. It's quality,
right?
I'll be able to quantity. So,
can I ask you something personal?
Yeah, anything.
Now we know Baxter is going to be not by your side, you know, forever. In spirit,
yeah.
He will be. Will you be continuing with another dog?
Absolutely, yeah. I don't even know how long I can wait without another dog. I'll rescue another dog, a mature dog, I love this combination. I've never seen a dog that looks like Baxter, and I've seen a lot of dogs in San Diego because it's a very big doggy community. And I've gone to big doggy events where there were, you know, 3,000 and 5,000 dogs, and I've never seen a Baxter.
Yeah, Baxter's
so,
very interesting in his look. His little, what do you call him? A golden chow?
Yeah, a golden chow.
He looks like a lion cub to me. But you know,
a lot of people say that he's. You know, I wish you could just see him. He's right now. He's got his little head on my lap, and he's sound asleep, and his front legs are crossed. And he just looks like a little baby to me, you know?
Yeah, I do know. Robert and I have a 12-year-old Siberian Husky who has brought a lot of joy and anxiety to our lives. He's 12. He's a retired sled dog. And he was actually our first dog together as a couple. And, you know, that dog, he gets away with murder with Robert, and I'm pretty strict on him. But, you know, he ran about 3,000 miles on the front of a sled, the side of a sled, the basket of a sled. He's done a lot for us, and we're going to miss him when he goes, and I'm already picking out new ones now, which is probably premature. But, you know, dogs do wonderful things, not just for us as their owners, but for anybody that they come in contact with. It doesn't necessarily always have to be a therapy situation, does it?
No, you know, it's so funny. Today my husband was getting, and it was at the dentist, and someone was there, and they said that they were at the University of San Diego in La Jolla, and they saw Baxter's book there.
Oh.
And it was like, you know, I mean, we hear all these strange places that Baxter's book is located, you know, because it is in bookstores across the country now. Not many, because times are tough. People aren't buying a lot of books, and this is a very niche book. But it is, of all the doggy books now that are out, it's number 40 on Amazon, which is pretty good. There's like 10,000 dog books, you know. And it just got released June 1st. So, who knows? Who knows? He has had some big interviews, and he's got some big national programs looking at him. And I surely hope he gets that exposure, since the entire project is for charity.
And that's one of the things that brought you guys to our attention. I know that you and I follow each other on Facebook, and we've corresponded a few times back and forth. And you know, I'm not your typical dog trainer. I'm a little bit eccentric and a little bit wild out there in my thought processes sometimes. But I always enjoy reading your posts, and I hope you do mine as well, because we're out there trying to, you know, educate as many people as we can and promote people that we have on our show. And you know, this isn't about financial gain for us. This is about how dogs truly change lives, and that's what it's all about.
Oh yeah, I mean I completely identify. And you know, we have three charities the book's going to: San Diego Hospice, the American Humane Society, and then the SPCA. And so I'm not taking anything from the book, and that's why I feel really wonderful promoting it, pushing it, you know, talking about it, because not a penny is coming back to me. And I love the whole concept of what Baxter does, and the joy and the comfort he brings to people. It's tremendous, and I get rewarded infinitesimally in that environment myself. So it's not completely selfless here. I am getting my riches are all in my heart, and I'm just getting a bigger and bigger and bigger, fatter heart, and I love it. It's wonderful, and I'm meeting so many fantastic people just because of Baxter.
And that's exactly right. You know, that's why we go to work every day. Because you know, that's what drives us as well. So, again, just to educate people that are listening, is therapy work volunteer work, or is it a paid position, or you know?
Volunteer. It's completely volunteer work.
Do you ever the two of you go out for ice cream afterwards?
No, but we process this on the way home a lot. We talk. And then I journal when I get home, and that's how I got the book together. I just kept journaling about these experiences I was having, because they were blowing my mind. I thought, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And I continued to come home and say that. And as I kept writing about it, I mean, I would not have believed it if I hadn't seen it. These were like little miracles that were happening, and it was my little dog that was creating them. And so I just felt, it was incumbent upon me to do something with all this information, and I really believe I have a wonder dog on my hands, and so I decided to take all those journal entries and put them into a book. And the whole thing was just a passionate. It was probably the most passionate act I've ever engaged in.
It's beautifully written, and you know, a lot of people at Christmas time are going to be browsing around, and they're going to see your book, and they're going to, oh, another dog book. If they just take a moment and read even one passage in that book, they're going to be hooked. It really does truly teach even the most novice of dog owners, or even non-dog owners. It teaches you about the connection. This is why humans are connected to canines. You really captured that.
Thank you very much for saying that. So I worked hard on it, I promise.
I can tell you did.
Let's talk a little bit about your book. What is some of your favorite stories? What can you share in the book that will really motivate people to maybe not to, you know, train and work as a therapy dog team, but, you know, really to do something special with their dog for other people?
One of the interesting things about volunteering and what's happened to me is I'm meeting so many people my age who are at the end of their life. And it drives home the point of how essential it is. If you want to do something, if you want to make something happen, you only have right now. And everything that's happened before and everything that might happen is almost irrelevant. And the moment is so precious. And if you can find yourself doing something where you are almost unconscious about your personal life and you're engrossed in whatever it is that you're doing, then I believe that is the essence of life. And so when I was volunteering at hospice and I'm in a room with a 53-year-old woman or man who's at the end of their life, and they're going about it with courage and boldness and a amount of honor, and they want Baxter. One guy said the other day, he said, "I just like Baxter's vibration." And I just thought that was so cool. And, you know, and I put Baxter in bed with him, and he said, you know, he said, "Baxter needs for me to massage him." And I said, "Well, you go right ahead. He's going to love it." And I'm thinking, would I be that way if I were in bed instead of that man in bed? Would I, you know, could I come to the table and could I, you know, rise above and say, you know, this isn't my dog. You're just bringing this dog in, and you're fine, and everybody's fine, and you're still going to live, and I'm dying, you know. And so I try so hard to put myself in that person's place and think about appreciating what other people are doing for me. I don't know that I could do it. It's so hard for me to imagine it. But it has humbled me, and it has allowed me to stop and think about what really matters when I get frustrated or angry or short-tempered or mean-spirited or exasperated about life. And I just remember those moments, and all of a sudden I'm brought back to the center of what really matters. And everything eviscerates, and I'm a better person for it. And I'm grateful to Baxter for showing me all this. But my favorite story of all stories, to get back online, is the guy, 50 years old. It's called Barry's Nurse. And you see a picture of this nurse, Michelle. She's quite a nurse there at San Diego Hospice. She's just lost her partner, which makes her even more empathetic. And this guy has a disease called neurofibromatosis, which is very similar to John Merrick's disease, the elephant man. He has these huge cantaloupe-shaped, gnarly, gnarly growths all over his body. And he's bent over. He's 50 years old. He's in a wheelchair. And I walk in the room. At this time, Baxter's walking. I walk in the room with Baxter. Baxter walks right up to him and starts licking his hand. I think, oh, my God, I can't do this. I'm a volunteer. I don't have to do this. And then I look back at Baxter, and I look at the smile on this gentleman's face, and I thought, if Baxter can do it, I can do it. Baxter doesn't see any of this. Why can't I be like Baxter? It was a very, you know, aha moment, and I have chill bumps right now telling you this, because none of that matters. You know, that external is so, it really doesn't matter. And if we can just get to the heart and soul and the integrity of individuals, and just to think it's my doggie who showed me this. I just love it. He's such a teacher. He's such a little Buddha guy. I just love him. And that visit was profound for me. And we were there for a very long time, and the nurse moved Barry from the wheelchair to the sofa so that Baxter could get on his lap and they could cuddle. And this gentleman looked at me, and he couldn't speak, and he looked completely different, and I did not see any of those growths on him because of Baxter. I just looked right through him to his heart. And I've never, what can I say? What a lesson. What a lesson. Talk about prejudice. Oh, my God.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. And, you know, I'm only 38 years old, and Michelle will attest, I think that I'm invincible. I do not let anything stand in the way of what I try to do, and sometimes I struggle with that, especially when I sometimes think about what is to come. You know, I still think that I can you know, beat my kids at a 50-yard dash and all that kind of stuff. And
It is
very humbling to really, you know, look that in the face, and you know, looking through your book and reading through it this past week. It really brought some of that to light, and I want to ask about one of my favorite stories. It's Donald's birthday. That was a real touching one where he shared
43 when I said, you know, I was talking about my hot flashes, and
right.
You know, he said I'll never reach that age. You know, it's really, oh my gosh.
And you know, people truly do go through life thinking that the end isn't going to come. You know, oh, I'm only 40, I'm only 50, I'm only 60. I've still got a lot to live. And just reading this story about Donald at 44, it really shows that tomorrow may never come. You know?
Oh yeah, that's why this whole thing about moments with Baxter, the moment. I mean,
right.
If you can, if each of us can in some way really savor the moment and make the moment special every day of our life, then when we do reach the end, whenever that is, we will feel that we had a bountiful life. I met a woman recently, young woman, in love with her dogs, two dogs, Jack Russell Terriers. They were at hospice. Her husband was there. They had hoped to have children, but she contracted breast cancer, and she was at the end of her life, 35 years old. And she said the way she had looked at this was, I'm 35 years old, and yes, my life has been truncated, but wait a minute. Maybe it hasn't. Maybe 35 is a full life for me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I have lived a bountiful, full life and a complete life, and I should not get hung up about 35.
Right.
And so, you know, I have to tell you that the majority of the people that we see at hospice are young people. I don't mean kids. I mean people my age, your age, you know, middle age and younger, 30, 40, 50, 60, more than older people.
And you know, that's,
cancer is an epidemic. So
right, and most of the public don't even think about that. And I know it's a grim thing to think about on a daily basis, but
I don't know that it is. I think if we were to say, if you parasociate these negative, you know, adjectives with it, I think okay, yes. But if you look at it like this is a process that's going to happen,
mm-hmm.
it's we can't avoid it, and we need to understand that it's there and it's going to come at some point in time, and it really does matter how we live our life. It really does matter because it will end, and it may end way sooner than we want it to end.
That's exactly right. And we got about 10 minutes left, Melissa, and I was wondering if there's anything else that you want to share about your book, about Baxter, about all of his exploits on blogs and you know, appearances and things. Say whatever you like for the next few minutes.
Okay. One of the other things that happens to us when we volunteer is we go in rooms where people have no one. They have no family left, no connections, or no one who visits them. And there's a story in there about, it's called The Intelligent Bump, and there was a woman who had very, very little left in her life. And Baxter became the center of her life. And I think it's so wonderful that Baxter can bond with other people, and that's what makes a really great therapy dog. They don't just have to be with their owners. I can be on the other side of the room, and Baxter can be having an interface with another person, and they can be having a conversation of which I am not privy to, and that person all of a sudden feels closer to Baxter than they do anybody else that has come into their life for their whole life. And I think that's a remarkable feature of a therapy dog and of Baxter. And I encourage people to take their dog. I think dogs really want to work. They really need a mission. And I think if you just, it's like an elderly person, or if you leave them to sit in front of the TV all day, nothing's going to happen. They're going to get Alzheimer's. They're not going to be stimulated. It's very important to stimulate your dog, to take your dog to new environments, to socialize your dog, take them to doggy parks, take them to beaches, but truly spend time with your dog. They're not just a backyard toy that every now and again you say, hey, how are you doing? Make them your companion, and you will be changed forever for the better.
That's exactly
no
right.
I am really glad that you said that, because that's what Robert and I try to teach people on a daily basis, is that your dog is not a piece of furniture.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, I know that people think that they can have a dog and have it just be there and not do anything, but it's essential if a person is going to commit to have a dog, that they understand that it's a primal relationship, and dogs require human contact on a daily basis, many, many times a day.
That's
it's
exactly
very
right.
Very important for the dog. Very important for the dog's health and well-being and longevity. And if a person can commit to that, they will have an experience with an animal, I believe, that will supersede any other friendship or love relationship they've ever had. I don't think I've ever been more in love than I am right now with Baxter. You know, I brush his teeth, I give him a bath, I clean his ear. I just love I love to do everything to him, and after I do everything to him, he gives me a kiss all the time, and at night he kisses me before he goes to bed. He is a human angel, human/angel in fur. He really is, and I look in his eyes and I swear he knows everything that's going on.
And you know that's the story of the Rainbow Bridge. How the dog crosses over
I know, I have it. Yeah, I love that story.
And possibly comes back as a human. I don't know. And we promoted just a couple of weeks ago. We were talking to another author about her book about pet loss, and we were talking about the story, The Art of Racing in the Rain by Garth Stein.
I'm reading that book right now.
And if you have an older dog, you can really see what Enzo is all talking about, can't you?
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's making me laugh and cry at the same time.
Yes.
Which I hope, you know, my book, I hope people aren't turned about that it revolves around end of life, because I think that one of the things that, you know, Cesar Millan endorsed this book now, and he said, you know, even the end of your life can be a momentous occasion. It can not only be a happy time, but it can be a time where you make a new friend, and that new friend could be Baxter. Or could be your dog. And that would be the most essential thing that happened in that person's life. And it would be because of your dog. And it would just bring so much joy to each person's life who does that.
That's exactly
right. Life is not about money and material things. Life is not about how much you can gather. You know, it's about how much you can give.
Mm-hmm.
Because it comes back so fast and furiously. The more you give, the more you get. It's remarkable.
So I guess the moral to this story is put down the cell phones and the Twitters and the Facebooks and all of that stuff, and take your dog for a walk. Really enjoy the relationship that you have with your dog. I think it's 2.1 dogs per household. You know, very similar to the old statistic of 2.1 children and the white picket fence and all that. Everybody in this nation has a dog these days, and it's funny that only 75% or 25% of those are trained. So that leaves 75% of those dogs out there that truly just lay around the house while their owners are at work, or tied up in the backyard, or whatever instance that dog is living his existence. Let's go out there and promote that, you know, do something with your dog. Take him for a walk. Go to the park, like you said. Take him to the beach. Whatever you want to do, get out there and enjoy life. And that's key to this, because as your book says, and as we have said over and over, you don't know about tomorrow. And that's the reality of life.
It is. And this thing called death is not the boogeyman. It is another piece of your journey, and it does not have to be a bad time. And I assure you that if you share your dog with those kinds of people who are at that brink in their life, that journey, that transition, your life will be forever changed.
That's
and,
exactly
and the
right.
life stays on for a long, long, long time when you leave a room like that. And you know, it's the most fulfilling, I would say it's the most fulfilling thing that's ever happened to me in my life is volunteering with Baxter.
You know, Melissa, let's leave it right there. That's a great ending point. We are talking to Melissa Joseph, the author of Moments with Baxter. You can find her book at momentswithbaxter.com. She is on Facebook as well. Actually, Baxter's on Facebook. So if you want to look Baxter up on Facebook, just type in Baxter in the search bar, and he will come up. If you're following me on Facebook or Twitter, you can find Baxter as one of my friends as well. And, you know, it's an amazing thing that Melissa does is have Baxter quote-unquote, give updates every day, and I think that's amazing. So, momentswithbaxter.com, the author is Melissa Joseph, and her book is Moments with Baxter, a true read, would make an excellent gift just to educate people more about the connection that we have with our dogs. We're going to close here. This is Dr. Robert Forto. You're listening to the Dog Doctor Radio Show. We can be heard every Saturday morning, 9:30. Never forget your dreams. We do have the best and train the rest here at Denver Dog Works. Melissa, thank you very much for being on our show.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Michelle. I appreciate being on the show, and so does Baxter.
Thank you very much. Give him a good hug for us, okay?
Oh, I will. I will. Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon. Goodbye.
Okay, bye-bye.
This show was recorded in September of 2009, about 13 months ago. Sadly, we are to report that both Aneke and Baxter have passed on over the Rainbow Bridge. Aneke passed away in July of this year, and Baxter shortly after the airing of this program. But their legacy still lives. Baxter's book is still available at momentswithbaxter.com. And as many of you guys know, I'm up in Alaska training for my first Iditarod in 2013, and I plan to run under our Team Aneke banner. If you guys have any questions, comments, or concerns, please contact us through our radio show here at live@dogdoctorradio.com, or you can visit our page at denverdogworks.com. or through Facebook and Twitter. If you guys like what you hear, make sure you hit that favorite button on the Blog Talk player, and you will get a reminder every week of when the show will air. This is Dr. Robert Forto reporting for the Dog Doctor Radio Show. We'll see you guys next time. Never forget your dreams. Goodbye.